Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18th floor here. It's a 303 Wacker doing our show. It's Monday morning, and I'm back from the holiday. Had a fine time off. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday. It's a jokey time. We're going to talk about the worst series TV finales of all time. And we'll talk about some of the best front women in rock. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. So it is Monday morning, and that means Eric Childress and Colin Suter always join me for the movie reviews, but we're doing something special this morning. We're going to talk briefly about, you know, some of the new movies that came out this week. But this is, you know, we're halfway through the year, which is always shocking, but we are halfway through the year, and we like to do our favorite movies of 2018 so far. So it's, you know, halfway through. So so for the past 6 months or 7 months, we will talk about our favorite movies of that 15 each. So let's welcome them, and they're live in studio here, and first time in our studios, in our new studios. Here's Colin and Eric. Hey guys.
Hey there.
How are you?
Feeling like royalty up here. This
yeah,
is pretty nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful view.
Water.
Yeah. No, it's nice. It is nice. They did a great job. You know, and these are, everything is all new and shiny.
Yeah,
it's really nice. I have an office now.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Only took 33 years. No.
Oh, wow.
But I do have an office.
Okay.
I saw the pictures of all the people you've taken pictures with, like, from flashback.
Right. I just hung those up on my window.
Nice.
Yeah. And, So, anyway, we're here, and we're ready to go. We can talk about some of the new movies really quickly here. I guess the big one here, Eric, why don't you tell us about Ant-Man and the Wasp real quick?
Yeah. You want the description of it, or just...
Yeah, just the description real quick.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Paul Rudd's character is now trying to, he's been on house arrest since the events of Civil War for the last 2 years.
Right.
And but he's thrust back into with the relationship with Hank Pym and his daughter, played by Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas, when they realize that his wife and her mother may actually still be alive. Details that we found out in the first movie, she's trapped possibly for 30 years in the quantum realm, shrunk down to such a small size that she can't find her way out. And Scott has been having visions of mom, and they believe that he might be able to help them rescue her. Meanwhile, everyone wants a piece of Hank's all of his research and his portable lab, and so, you know, chases ensue, basically.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, there's really not much to the plot. I mean, if people are looking for some sort of grand Marvel villain in this, they're not going to find it, even though they do have Walton Goggins in the film. But, no, this movie is just meant to just purely entertain. It is just meant for fun. It is there for families. It's having a lot of fun with the concept of the, you know, exactly what size Ant-Man is going to be, big, small, medium.
Right.
A lot of references to inner space and old, you know, shrinkage movies, and it's just fun. I mean, the first hour of this movie I thought was really entertaining. Like, I thought it was going to be better than the first one, and then the back half kind of settles in with the action, and it's fun, and I think it's about on par with the first movie. But I enjoyed it immensely.
Okay. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I thought the first film was just okay. It seemed like there was some, you know, missed opportunities in it, or there's something missing about it. And I know that part of that has to do with, you know, the switching out the director. This one, you know, just felt a little more consistent. And, you know, there's, like Eric said, it's just meant to be one of the more enjoyable, lighthearted Marvel films, much like Guardians of the Galaxy. I think I enjoy the Guardians movies just a little bit more, I think, because there's more of a variety of, you know, different characters and different types of humor in them. You know, all the stuff in this movie, like, you know, everything with, you know, Michael Pena and David Desmalchian, and who's the third actor in that group?
T.I.
All right. Right. You know, all that stuff is really funny. And, you know, it's just, I especially love any car chase that involves Hot Wheels. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty fun. So, you know, there's some really inventive stuff in this movie. I wouldn't say it's, you know, top, you know, upper tier Marvel, but it's certainly not lower tier either. It's kind of in the middle for me, but, you know, it's, you know, you could do worse.
I like both of these movies. I like both Ant-Man movies. I think they're very entertaining. And they're really funny. I mean, there's some real big laughs in these movies. I think Paul Rudd's great. And I think Evangeline Lilly is tremendous in it. And Michael Douglas seems to be having a really good time here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you guys said, it's not, you know, I mean, I like the Guardians movies more, but they're in that same sort of vein. They're just entertaining and really funny, as opposed to, you know, like Infinity War, which was not funny at all. So, I'm recommending it, too. I thought it was a lot of fun. Perfect summer kind of movie. Yeah, you know, you just go in, have a good time, and, mm-hmm. you know, and so.
Yeah, bring the kids. I mean, these movies, they might be PG-13 rated, but these are PG movies through and through. They're very, very family friendly.
And it's just under 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah, gotta love that.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Eric, real quick, first Purge.
Good God.
How bad?
It's the worst of the Purge movies.
Oh, no.
Which is funny because this is the movie that I've been clamoring for since the actual first Purge, that I want to see how these things got all, you know, how it all came to be.
Yeah.
And they kind of, you know, give you 20 minutes of exposition of how this is going to be. Marissa Tomei is the mastermind now of this whole thing. And seriously, Nick, it'll anger you just how wasted Marissa Tomei is in this movie.
I can just tell by the trailer.
It's worse than you can possibly imagine, actually. And she's the doctor that comes up with the psychological thing, and they're going to test it, the experiment on Staten Island, to see how it goes. And when it's not going so great, the government, which is now this third party that has now taken over from Republicans and Democrats, they actually bring in mercenaries to force people to purge, which makes logically no sense. Of how you're going to get people like, oh, well, these people are killing people. Why don't I join in on the fun? You know, and they never bother to answer any of the questions. Why aren't people doing white collar crime? Why aren't people, you know, doing something? Why, it's always murder.
Yeah.
You know, in these movies. And the action scenes in this movie are completely, they're terrible. And I mentioned on Twitter that the Blumhouse movies are really sickening my stomach lately, because they're taking real life events and trying to massage over them into entertainment, and not doing it in a satiric way. Like, I mean, there's a church shooting in this movie. It's off screen, but it happens. And I'm really kind of getting sickened by these things. And this movie is just terribly made on top of it. So,
okay. So first Purge, bad. As we figured it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Leave No Trace. I've not seen that one. Colin has not seen that one.
I should say I did see it at our festival, but I need to see it again because I was just distracted beyond belief during the film, so I couldn't even really.
Colin had
a
long day.
Very long
up to that.
Yeah. So,
but it's Deborah Granik's new movie. Mm-hmm. Who did Winter's? It was her first feature since Winter's Bone.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Foster and I think her name, Thomasin McKenzie plays his daughter.
Now you saw this. You reviewed this one on the show already, haven't you?
No, I haven't actually. Oh, I didn't see it till our festival.
Oh, okay.
This is one that I missed at Sundance this year, and everyone was raving about it, and for very good reason. I mean, Ben Foster plays a father who's got some severe PTSD issues, and he's kind of gone off grid with his daughter in kind of a Captain Fantastic kind of way.
Oh, don't mention that.
I just bring that up in context. That's the reaction I was expecting when I brought that up. But they live in the woods, and they, you know, they cook and they, you know, farm off the land and everything, and hide away from the authorities, and, you know, try to make their best that they can. But then they get picked up by the authorities, and then it becomes a matter of, you know, can they readjust to society in any way? And again, this is another movie where I thought like the first half of the movie was really extraordinary. I mean, Ben Foster is great. McKenzie is terrific. Then I think it kind of goes into material that we've seen before, the kind of the same kind of direction where a father, the child has to break away from the parent because of obvious reasons. We've seen that direction. And I think when it kind of becomes that in the third act. It's just like, well, I've kind of seen this before, and it didn't really offer anything new to me. I do want to see it again to see just to watch the performances, mm-hmm. but it's definitely worth seeing. It's a good film.
All right, and then one more we'll cover very quickly here. I have not seen it, but I hear it's very divisive, and that I'm sorry to bother you. Colin, why don't you tell us a little bit about Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah, so it's a comedy. Takes place in Oakland, California, but it could take place on another planet completely, really. It doesn't really matter. Lakeith Stanfield plays a guy who is having trouble just nailing down a job. And so eventually he gets into this, you know, telemarketing gig. And of course he sucks at it at first. And then a coworker of his, played by Danny Glover, you know, says, well, why don't you try using a more white voice? And he just automatically adopts one that sounds suspiciously like David Cross.
Right.
Because it is.
Right.
And then he becomes this kind of, you know, telemarketing superstar in this company. He gets, you know, promoted, but this company is up to no good, and they, you know, he's got coworkers who, you know, have not been promoted yet, who are, you know, organizing protests against this company because of what it's doing. You know, it's having to do with, you know, slave labor and things like that. And his girlfriend, played by Tessa Thompson, who's like an artist. And
I love her, man.
Yeah. And she's like an artist and activist, and she's also encouraging him to, like, you know, take a more active role in these protests instead of just being, you know, the new lackey for this company, which is run by a very smarmy opportunist, played by, of course, Armie Hammer. Mm. So this is a movie, this is a really hard to describe movie. I mean, like, that's the most normal description I can give you for this plot line. That's a very basic storyline. But the execution of this thing is so completely off the charts crazy that I actually quite enjoyed just the sort of the boundless comedic energy of this movie, in that it just, there's not a single normal choice. There's not a single normal scene in this movie. Every scene has something a little bit off about it, whether it's the music or a performance choice or something happening in the background. This movie revels in absurdist comedy, and you're either on board with that or you're not. And I'm very much on board with it. I know there's a lot of criticism that it's so scatological that, you know, that doesn't nail down anything satirical, and, you know, that you can really get a grasp on. And that, I don't disagree with that. But I think if you're kind of tired of, you know, comedies that are just very straight laced and follow a formula, which, like, we've had so much of in the last few years, you know, this is one that really takes some chances and is, I enjoyed the ride, but, you know, thinking about it later after it was over, I was like, yeah, okay, there's some flaws here. It doesn't hit a lot of satirical marks, but in the moment of watching it, I had a really good time.
Okay, and Eric, I know you not a fan.
No, I'm not. I thought that this film started, like, the first half hour, the first act of the movie, I think, has a lot of that energy that Colin's talking about, and it's quite funny. But once you get to, like, the sixth, seventh time that they're using the white voice as the central joke of the film, which is like, I got it already. And then it takes these other directions, and it's just, to me, it just wasn't funny. Mm. I don't think that they were doing anything new with that stuff. I mean, it just, you know, because you're throwing stuff at the screen and it's like, oh, it's different, you know, it's like, well, it doesn't mean anything. And at some point, it was just like, I felt like it was a music video director who saw production of Rhinoceros more than a few times. Okay.
Having starred in a production of Rhinoceros, yes. I can say.
Yes.
That's weird.
Yes. It goes down that kind of direction, but I think in a way that kind of just the more jokes that they throw at the screen, the more it kind of blends into a one joke premise, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. So starts off great. There's a movie coming out in a few weeks that I think is better, that I also saw at Sundance, that we'll talk about then. But mm-hmm. I think it's a much better film, and also set in Oakland.
Okay.
So. Yeah, I agree with that as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. We'll talk about that, whatever that is, in a couple of weeks. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, We will unveil our top 15 best movies of the year so far. We're halfway through the year, and we always do this. And when we take a break here, we'll come back, and we'll start our lists of the best of 2018 so far. Coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on the 18th floor overlooking beautiful Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. We're going to talk about the worst series TV finales ever and the best front women in rock. That's some of the fun stuff we'll be tackling. But right now, we finished up the movie reviews. We'll talk box office in a little bit as well. But Eric and Colin have come down here live in studio. First time in the big studio here, the new digs. And we are halfway through the year. So at this point, usually the first Sunday in July-ish, we go through the past half a year of movies and unveil our top 15 favorite films so far for 2018. Eric and Colin, welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, so so far, Eric, what do you think of 2018?
Yeah, I think the stuff at the top is quite extraordinary, and I think there's definitely a lot of interesting movies, certainly some divisive movies as far as the quality is concerned. I think it's been an average year. I think, again, I think the strong stuff has been really strong, and there's been some stuff down the middle that's been really nice and surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can't say it's any better or worse than any other previous year that we've done this show.
Yeah. I think, but like you said, the good stuff is really good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are some great movies that
my
came
top
out.
Ten is... Yeah, I'm happy.
Oh, no, they're great. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the list here, and it's like, these are really good movies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's something right there. Colin, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, doing the half-year mark is always, you know, it's hard to get a gist of, you know, whether or not this is shaping up to be a great year or not a great year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the, you know, three of these being on my top 10 at the end of the year. It's quite possible.
Yeah,
you know that's usually the average. That's usually kind of how it
works out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me. I'll start. We'll go from 15 to one. One obviously being our favorite movie so far this year. So I'll start with 15, and it is the adaptation of Anton Chekhov's The Seagull, with an incredible cast, really well done, really entertaining, you know, any movie that has Saoirse Ronan and Elizabeth Moss in it automatically is good. That's pretty much it. But it's faithful, and it captures the Chekhov tone really well. And so that's my number 15. And it didn't get a lot of, I mean, nobody saw it.
No.
You know, I mean, a theater I saw it in, there were like two people in the theater.
Quite a few movies on our list that I think probably nobody saw.
Yeah, no, there are, yeah. Yeah. And a lot of them are too bad, too.
Yeah.
And this is one of them, The Seagull. If you're a fan of Chekhov and great acting, well, this movie has it in spades. So that's my number 15 of 2018. All right, Colin?
My number 15 is actually one that opened this weekend, and it's the documentary Whitney, about Whitney Houston, who, you know, I've never really been a big fan of. But this documentary didn't make me a bigger fan of it, but I appreciate, you know, what, you know, the bringing her life, you know, to light in this way, and, you know, what led her to the downfall. I think it's directed by Kevin MacDonald, who also did the Bob Marley documentary a few years ago. He's done a ton of movies, but, you know, this is kind of the closest cousin to that film. And I didn't see the Nick Broomfield documentary that also came out within the last year about Whitney Houston. I heard it wasn't as sensationalistic as his stuff usually is, but this one I thought was really, really well done, and really, I learned quite a bit about her. You know, that I never, you know, things about her that I never knew. Whitney.
Right, that's number 15. All right, Eric?
My number 15 is the film that I'm actually most looking forward to revisiting in a couple of weeks when it hits home video, and it will be a surprise that it's even this low on the list, but it's Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
Film that I worked into the top 15 specifically for that reason, because I think it's a film that I'm going to like even more. This is the second time around. You know, I had the experience of a lifetime this year at South by Southwest.
Yeah,
Spielberg in house. Yeah, yeah.
And more importantly, Olivia Cooke.
Olivia. Yeah, she'll be brought up a few times tonight, I think. Yeah. I mean, a really fun movie. I mean, it is geek nostalgia to the nth degree, and I'm really looking forward to just watching Spielberg just have fun for a change.
It's so funny. I still can't get over this, that I'm ranking a Spielberg movie two times in a row higher than you did. I like The Post more than you did, and I like Ready Player One more than you did. I find that very interesting. All right. Number 14 on my list of the best of 2018 is a movie that nobody saw. Was in theaters for about a minute and was also on VOD, and that's Ghost Stories, which is this British anthology horror movie that is really creepy and builds to a really wonderful final story with Martin Freeman. And it is very, very British. I will say that. It's very, very British. But it brought me back to my childhood, because I grew up seeing those Hammer and Amicus anthology movies, like the original Tales from the Crypt with Peter Cushing and House That Dripped Blood, and all these movies that made up of short stories that were, you know, from British companies and had predominantly a British cast. So that's what it felt like, my childhood. And it's a very well-made movie and really creepy. And there's been some really good scary movies this year so far, and this is one of them. And I really wish more people would have seen it, especially people who have a soft spot in their heart for those movies that inspired it, because it's every bit as entertaining and every bit as creepy as those old 70s and 60s anthology films that came out of Britain. It's a shame nobody saw it, and you know, this is the kind of movie that would play really, really well with a captive audience. I saw it on my couch alone and it still was creepy. So Ghost Stories is number 14 for me. Okay.
My number 14 is also a movie that nobody saw, a movie called Journey's End, a World War One film with Aja Butterfield, Paul Bettany, and Toby Jones. It's about these, you know, soldiers in World War One and these trenches who are, you know, they're going to be going into battle in a few days, and just that feeling of dread, knowing that that the chances of them coming back from this battle are slim. And you really get a sense of, you know, the claustrophobia and being in these trenches and, you know, the close quarters. And this movie snuck up on me as I was watching it, and just got really involved with all the characters and all the little conflicts that were going on within them. And it's just really well done. World War One film, Journey's End. I'm not sure if it's on VOD yet or DVD. I didn't look it up yet, but definitely check it out if you get a chance.
Okay. Yeah, man, that thing came and went.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 14 for Eric.
My number 14 is a film that I think was probably going to come up later tonight. It's a film I've watched twice now, and probably going to continue to watch throughout the year just to see exactly how it evolves. And the evolves is the key word there, because it's Annihilation. You know, a film that was buried by the studio, pretty much, unfairly. And I don't know if I love it as much as some people who really took to the film. I think there's some really interesting ideas brewing beneath the surface. Don't know if it worked as a whole. It works, but I like so many of the parts individually. It has probably one of the great scare scenes of the year. even though it's not, you know, it's an internal horror movie. I mean, there's almost a Cronenbergian type level to the way that people view self destruction, and I think there are different ways to interpret what this movie is trying to say about that very aspect, and there's probably no wrong answer for it. So I think that's just going to lead to further discussions, and it might even move up on my list the more I watch it. But I've seen it twice, looking forward to seeing it a third time.
Fascinating movie, man. Okay, so that's your number 14. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. My number 13 is Steven Soderbergh's Unsane, which I thought was pretty fascinating. Famously shot with an iPhone. Claire Foy plays a woman who is put into an institution and is relatively certain that her stalker is there with her. And you don't know whether or not it's all real or it's in her head. I think it's really well done. I think it's really creepy, and I think Claire Foy is great in it. It's a really terrific performance, and she really carries it. And this movie could have gone, you know, either way. I think the ambiguity of the way that Soderbergh put this film together, I think, adds layers of mystery to it. And again, anchored by, I think, one of the best performances of the year with Claire Foy. She's so good in it. And Joshua Leonard is very creepy as her, maybe her stalker. People might remember him from, you know, just Blair Witch, basic. No, he was in that movie.
Hump Day,
which was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been a long time since he's been in a movie, like I think, right? Or has he been doing indie stuff that I've been missing?
I think he's been doing a lot of indie stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Maybe not a lot, but he's been around.
Yeah, so Soderbergh, I think, made another terrific movie. I think the gimmick of it being on an iPhone that was shot with an iPhone everybody was hyping about. They weren't really talking about how good the performances are. It was just like, it was that movie that was shot on an iPhone, you know. And but it's much more than that. And so I really liked Unsane. That's my number 13. All right.
My number 13 is a movie we talked about last week, Damsel, the Zellner Brothers Western that is, another one of these Westerns we've seen in the last few years that have just kind of taken the genre and turned it on its ear, taking a really interesting story and making an doing a really interesting structural change to it that a lot of movies wouldn't think to do. It's Robert Pattinson and Mia Wasikowska. Did I get it right?
Okay,
I got it right.
Good.
Yes. Without reading it, I got
right.
Both giving terrific performances in this film, and it's just really funny and unpredictable, and it's a kind of movie that takes a risk with storytelling that I'd kind of like to see more of. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm glad you're being vague with it.
Yeah,
because I haven't seen it yet.
Oh yeah,
I still am very excited to see it. Okay, that was your number 13. Yeah. What's your number 13, Eric?
Well, speaking of films that need to be a little bit vague about, and also a nice little pattern of Year of the Woman films in our number 13 slots is Tully. Nice return to form for Jason Reitman, who's had a couple films recently that have just not measured up to the really great stuff. A lot of the great stuff seem to come with Diablo Cody.
Well, that's the thing. That's kind of the key.
That seems to be the key. I mean, if we're doing a mathematical thing, that there seems to be a pattern there. And I think this makes a really nice companion piece to Young Adult, which was a very underseen collaboration that they had. Charlize Theron, I think, is great. I think she gives one of the best performances of the year. Mackenzie Davis, as this night nanny, as she is called, that kind of reignites her Theron's passion for life. I kind of saw the direction that this film was going in, but even when that occurred, it didn't bother me. I was along for it. I'm mm-hmm. I saw what you were doing, mm-hmm. and I'm fine with it. And it was just nice to see that collaboration working again.
Yeah. Well, you'll hear more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, look, we're going to break here, all right? Colin and Eric are here. We're live in studio, and we're doing our It's Halfway Through the Year Top 15 list, best movies so far of 2018. And we will continue that discussion right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. We did the Monday morning movie reviews. It also means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we got more coming up as well. We're going to talk about the worst series TV finales of all time and some of the best women who front in rock. That's all coming up here, having some fun. But right now, Eric Childress and Colin Suter have come down live in the studio for a little special occasion here. We're halfway through the movie year, so we are unveiling our 15 favorite films of 2018 so far. Colin and Eric, welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, so we are up to number 12 now on my list, and we'll do a little. We'll do a recap when we get to the top 10. We'll do a recap of the bottom five. Number 12 has been mentioned already, and that's Annihilation. I think an endlessly fascinating movie that was, I think, yes, buried and mishandled, but also. I think it was a movie that really just sort of confounded people. Like when they saw it, they were like, "What?" My parents didn't know what the hell was going on. I saw it with my folks, and they were like, "What was that?" It's got a ton of interesting ideas. I think Natalie Portman's all the acting is good in it. Really strong female performances, mm-hmm. strong female, and some really scary stuff. And kind of a mind blowing last 10 minutes. I mean, like what? You know, I mean that is a really. The last 15 minutes of Annihilation is just really out there and crazy in a good way and, like, really risky. And You know, there have been some really interesting and fascinating science fiction movies that have come out recently, and this is one of them. And I just don't think audiences got it, or it wasn't what they expected, considering how they advertised it. And it is a movie that confounds expectations. I don't know what kind of expectations I had going in to see it, but I don't know what the... I mean, I just sat there and I was mesmerized by the entire film. Scary and interesting and smart. You mentioned David Cronenberg stuff. There's a little bit of The Thing in it as well. It's smart, weird, very weird science fiction, and I think it's really strong. So number 12 for me is Annihilation. All right, go.
My number 12 has also been mentioned already, and that's Ready Player One. It's you know, geekdom and fandom has kind of permeated our culture and in various ways, you know, through shows like Stranger Things. And, you know, it's kind of fun for Spielberg himself to come in and say, okay, it's my turn to play in the sandbox. Here's what I'm a fan of, you know, and I'm just going to, you know, just kind of have my turn to just really pay homage to directors that I love and movies that I love that you guys also love, that, you know, that they're not all from my past. You know, it's cool. Like,
there's a Zemeckis bomb.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah,
right,
exactly. Zemeckis
bomb.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's just that's what it is. It's just, you know, a Spielberg movie that opens with, you know, Van Halen's Jump. You know, he's not trying to change the world with this one. You know, so just sit back, eat your popcorn, and enjoy. And that's what I did. Yeah. So, twice.
Okay. All right. Actually. All right. Eric, number 12?
My number 12 is probably the story of the year as far as movies and box office is concerned. That's Black Panther. Ryan Coogler did such a fantastic job with this movie. You know, people like to say, well, Marvel's Black Panther. No, I say it's Ryan Coogler's Black Panther. You know, a director that in just a few movies has just elevated, just shown you that he's going to be a guy to be reckoned with for some time. And Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan give you, you know, this wonderful, you know, new world in the Marvel universe, and the action scenes are great, and Letitia Wright, who, you know, should be brought up when people talk about this movie, is so wonderful.
She's
one
great.
Of my favorite characters of the year.
Yeah.
And it's just it just worked on so many levels, and surprisingly moving at the end of the film as well. So you know, that's probably gonna be higher on some people's list, but Black Panther is a solid number 12 for me.
Didn't make my list, which is, I mean, I liked it very, 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 very much, but it just didn't make it. There were other movies that I liked more.
Yeah, same here.
So let's move on to number 11. My number 11 is Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, which I just thought was a blast. And in the same sort of vein as the Fantastic Mr. Fox, and it had, a few people providing voices. I mean, I think all of SAG is
like eight columns of names on the poster. It's like,
I found it to be really charming and really funny, and I know it wasn't as well received. I mean, it did okay at the box office.
It didn't do, I think, as well as they were hoping for.
I thought it was really great. I loved all the voice work. The animation is, you know, if you liked that style of animation, Fantastic Mr. Fox, it's the same kind of thing. And it's a Wes Anderson movie. I mean, at this point, I know a lot of people, including the two people that are in this room, have kind of had it with Wes Anderson.
Me especially.
And are like, yeah, okay, I get it. I understand you're quirky, you're Wes Anderson. But I happen to really like those things that he does. I like the Wes Anderson style and the cliches. I embrace it, and I really thought Isle of Dogs was very, very, very entertaining. So there you go.
I'll take Fantastic Mr. Fox over that one.
Like them both. I think Fantastic Mr. Fox I like more only because I've seen it more, and I'm, you know.
And it's just anchored more by, you know, Roald Dahl storyline.
True.
You know,
so. Absolutely true.
My 11 has been mentioned twice already, and that's Annihilation. You know, absolutely one of the smartest, craziest sci-fi movies we've had in a long, long time, and it's going to take multiple viewings to see like where I really rank it at the end of the year. So, and I'm glad you know, it came out early, so I have plenty of time to, you know, really watch it again and digest it. So,
okay, all right, we're going to break here right before Eric. You give us number 11. We'll do a recap too when we get back on what we got so far. We got a break here, and we will be back. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Eric and Colin live in studio, and we are giving you our favorite movies of 2018 so far, because we're halfway through. All right, we'll do more right after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. That means the Monday morning movie reviews. We did those. We'll talk a little box office with Eric Childress. But the guys are live in studio with me as we are now halfway through the year for movies, and we are giving you our top 15 movies at the halfway point for 2018. We should get back to it. That's Colin, Eric, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right, I'll do a recap, and then we'll get to Eric, number 11. You do a recap as well before you give us your number 11. Okay. Number 15 on my list is The Seagull, 14 Ghost Stories, 13 Unsane, 12 Annihilation, and 11 Isle of Dogs. And your bottom five, Colin.
Number 15, Whitney. Number 14, Journey's End. Number 13, Damsel. Number 12, Ready Player One. And number 11, Annihilation.
Okay. And Eric?
And mine, number 15, Ready Player One. 14, Annihilation. 13, Tully. 12, Black Panther. And my number 11, mm-hmm. which has not been brought up yet, but I know for a fact is going to get brought up later tonight, and that is Thoroughbreds. Film that premiered at Sundance in 2017, finally came out this year. I watched again this weekend. Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy is these two girls who are plotting to kill Taylor-Joy's stepfather and wrangle in a fantastic Anton Yelchin. I think the best performance of his career. You know, rest in peace, yeah. Anton.
Yeah.
And just a really Not just you know, great performances and a really sharp script, but a real directorial touch to this movie. There's something that's what I was watching the second time watching it. Director Joey Heller, is that his name? That's okay, I got that right. Again, another talent to watch. I hope I'm really looking forward to see what he does next, because he does some really terrific stuff in between the stuff that's going on in this movie.
Okay. All right. So that's your number 11. Mm-hmm. All right. We're getting into the top 10. My number 10 is Ready Player One. Steven Spielberg's enormously entertaining. And, you know, salute to pop culture. You guys talked about it already. It was insanely paced. The visual world that they're in, the virtual world of the Oasis, is so beautifully brought to life. Everything about it is like really, you know, it's fast, it's funny, it's loaded with inside stuff. I mean, you got to see this movie 15 times to even get half of what the references are, because things just pop in and pop out and run. There's so many different iconic characters running around, and very entertaining. And you mentioned, you know, this is another Olivia Cooke movie, and she's wonderful, and the lead is great, Yeah, I just enjoyed the hell out of it, and it was exactly what it wanted to be. It was just a great, fun adventure movie with great special effects, and again loaded with references that are so much fun to discover while you're watching it. So, Ready Player One, number 10 on my list.
My number 10, you know, we've talked about a lot of crazy movies in the last, for these top bottom fives. Here's a movie that's just about someone who's just gentle, and it's Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary about Mr. Rogers.
I finally caught up with it, so
yeah,
you'll hear about it in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I know. This is again one of those movies that might end up, you know, being a little higher at the end of the year. But it's just a beautifully made documentary, you know, about a guy whose, you know, life hasn't really been chronicled that much. But this is as good a documentary as you could hope to get about this man who's had a huge impact on children and adults, and so I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, bring Kleenex.
Yeah. Exactly,
that's all I'm saying. All right, so number 10 for you, Eric.
Number 10, we've mentioned a lot of fun movies tonight. My number 10 is probably the film that I had the most fun at all year, and that's Incredibles 2. Brad Bird's just wonderful, energetic, hilarious sequel to, you know, Pixar's track record with sequels aside from the Toy Story movies has not been great, and Incredibles 2 is certainly a leap above all those films. It is fast paced, the energy, you know, everything about it, the score, the voice work, making Elastigirl front and center for a good portion of it is always welcome, because just to hear Holly Hunter's voice is just awesome, and it is insanely funny at times. Really love this movie.
Yeah. Okay. All right, number nine. We are up to number nine on my list, and that is Hotel Artemis, which is a film that I think deserved a much better fate than it got. Extraordinarily entertaining, a great cast. I mean, and Jodie Foster just knocks it out of the park, and her chemistry with Dave Bautista, of all people, is so strong and so good. And, you know, it's got a really cool and funny premise. Takes place in the future. She runs a hotel / hospital where she takes care of injured criminals. Jeff Goldblum shows up, and it's Sterling K. Brown is in it. And just a, you know,
Charlie Day.
Yeah, I was going to say from, you know, Philadelphia. anyway, they're all in this movie. They all have great moments. Lots of really fun action scenes. And I just thought this movie deserved a wider audience. And I hope it finds one in the cult arena, because it's got all the, you know, it's got all the makings of that.
I think it might.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, I think once this thing maybe gets shown a couple of times at midnight or comes out on DVD, people are going to go, we missed out on this thing. So I thought it was great. First time director again. Mm-hmm. Another first time director, just knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
And again, if you're a Jodie Foster fan, she's really, I mean, like, when we first reviewed this movie, Eric, it was like she's really good in this. Yeah. And it's one of those movies where you don't expect to have like incredible acting.
Right.
But you got to cast that good, but Jodie Foster is just so good in it. Like, the character choices, her voice, the age makeup that they put on her, mm-hmm. all the physical stuff that she does, and the background of the character. It's a wonderful performance and a really terrific movie. Hotel Artemis is number nine for me.
My number nine could also, you know, enjoy a cult following in the following years, and that's Thoroughbreds. Again, I know we're going to hear about this again later, so it's really not much more I can say about it that Eric didn't say already, or Nick isn't going to say later. But it's truly one of those kind of out of nowhere movies that you know, didn't stick around for very long, but when it was here, it was definitely one of the better, more interesting movies out there. So
yeah. All right. And Eric?
Well, my number nine is not going to achieve cult movie status, but I think it's going to find its audience on home video eventually. It's a movie called The Rider, Chloe Zhao's film, where she met these, you know, this writing family and crafted the story around them, involved in a real life injury that Brady Jandreau, plays the star of the movie, got into. And it's all about him, you know, rediscovering the courage, or, you know, the good sense to not get on a bull again, and possibly, you know, kill himself. Mm-hmm. And so we meet his family, his mentally challenged younger sister, a fellow writer who, due to an injury, is now completely, practically incapacitated. It's a really moving film, beautifully acted by a lot of first-time people, a really strong effort, and I hope more people see it, because it's a really beautiful movie.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, the casting is interesting too, mm-hmm. by having the real guy play that part.
And you see his real injury in the film. They play it on.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting in terms of that, in that regard.
Yeah.
Much more interesting than what Clint Eastwood did with the Paris movie.
We're not doing worse.
No, right? We're not. Okay. No, we're not.
Okay.
All right. We're going to break, though, right here, and Colin and Eric are here, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more of the best of 2018 so far, movie-wise. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. Halfway through 2018 in the movie year, and we are unveiling our 15 favorite films of 2018 so far. Colin, welcome back. And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so we are at, now at number eight on my list, and my number eight has been mentioned, and it's Tully. Jason Reitman and Diablo Cody seem to work really, really well together, and so does Charlize Theron, based on the two movies that she did with Diablo Cody. A really, you know, the one of the things that I loved about the movie is I like where it goes in the final act of the movie. I like what I think it threw some people with where it ends up and what ends up happening in the movie, but I really liked it. And it's also You know, it's like if you are pregnant, I don't know if you want to watch this movie. I'm not sure if you or if you're thinking about having children, you might go, you know, and after seeing this movie, you might go, no, I'm not. No way. Yeah. I mean, and it is, you know, brutally honest and intense at times and really, I would imagine, very accurate in terms of what people go through when they have children, and especially this
third child.
The third child, especially this woman, mm-hmm. played by Charlize Theron. Everybody is really great in it. Mackenzie Davis is really terrific, and she's like mysterious and strange and awesome and perfect for the role. But overall, just really great stuff. Like it's a great script, really honest. Really well directed by Jason Reitman, which it's a return to him. It is a return to form for him. So I think it's terrific. So that's Tully, my number eight. Okay.
My number eight is The Endless, another smart, interesting sci-fi movie, about these two brothers who were used to belong to this cult when they were kids, and now they're, you know, out of it, but then something brings them back to this to visit them, and I can't remember what it was, but the one brother feels the pull of the cult, you know, being pulled back into that life, and then the other brother is, you know, just trying to resist it again. And it's a fascinating movie because it doesn't, you know, go the obvious directions that you would expect it to. You know, it just kind of makes you wonder, like, well, who really is right here? You know, what really is going on with this cult, and what is it with that they believe, and you know, are they wrong to believe it? I'm not sure. And I found that a fascinating way to tell a story about this sort of thing. So directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who are also the stars of it, and they made a movie called Spring a few years ago. These guys are flying way too under the radar for the quality of work that they're doing. So hopefully that changes, you know, with their next film, whatever that's going to be. This is another really fascinating movie from these two guys. So, The Endless.
Okay. All right. Number eight for you.
My number eight is a match with Colin. It's The Endless. Nice. Yes. Colin mentioned Spring, movie that more people still need to see. You know, this Before Sunset with a Monster, basically, is what Spring is. And The Endless is just a fascinating follow-up. A really trippy science fiction type story. Again, it takes you in directions you don't see coming. There are some, you know, if Annihilation has a really great scare scene, this one has one of those moments in it as well. It's as trippy as that movie is, but also fun as well. Just the discovering where this movie is taking you. This is a movie that does deserve cult status. And these guys, like Colin said, these guys are flying under the radar, and I really hope that they get their break soon, because I would love to see them tackle something with a bit of a budget. And let them rework it however they want, because they're pretty great at it.
Okay. All right. I think we're getting to the point now where we're going to hear a lot of repeat titles. I think that's going to happen. Number seven on my list is Won't You Be My Neighbor, which I just saw, and I loved it. And everybody knows who Fred Rogers was, and everybody watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when they were growing up, and have been affected by this guy at some point, either as a child or as an adult. And this is a really terrific documentary, and I'm really glad to see the success that it's having, because people are going to see this thing, and it's making a really nice amount of money, considering that it's just this small little documentary. But it goes to show how much people love Fred Rogers and you know, and Mr. Rogers, and it's terrific, but bring tissues. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So, all right, that's my number seven.
My number seven has been mentioned, and that's The Incredibles 2. You know, Pixar sequels don't have to suck. And this one is just, you know, definitely one of the best of their sequels. But it's just also just, I think it is on par with the first film, which is a rare thing to say. But it's got all the magic, it's got all the quirky characters, and it's just got all the fun and pizzazz and humor. And it's just, you know, Brad Bird is still one of the essential voices of animation. And so, does The Incredibles 2. I'm happy it's a success. I mean, not that we would ever doubt Pixar movie being a success, right. But this thing is a success.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just huge. Finding Dory.
Yeah, it's huge.
Wow. So, yeah, Incredibles 2.
Okay. And number 7?
My number 7 is actually a film that I don't know if you guys have actually seen. I saw it at South by Southwest last year. It got a minor open. I think it opened at Facets in January while I was at Sundance, so I wasn't even on to talk about it. And it's a movie called Small Town Crime.
No, I haven't seen it.
With John Hawks as an alcoholic former police officer who is now a private investigator, discovers a badly beaten up woman on the side of the road and decides that this is going to be his entry point to try to solve this one case, figure out exactly what happened to her. And it leads him down a very dark path with corruption and some really shocking violence in the film. John Hawks given a star vehicle is always a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's a cast that includes Anthony Anderson, Octavia Spencer, Don Harvey. Great cast, great villain, one of the great villains of the year. Great mystery, fantastic final shootout. Robert Forster, Clifton Collins Jr. Also in the film. And again, fantastic final shootout. I watched it again this weekend. It's a tight 90 minutes, a film that probably nobody has seen, frankly. Right. And Saban Films, I think, really did a disservice on this by just not doing anything with it.
Right.
It's really unfortunate. It's on home video right now. Definitely check it out because I think it's pretty great.
Okay. All right. Hang on, guys. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, more of our favorite movies of 2018 so far here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live on the Allstate Skyline Studios here on the 18th floor, overlooking beautiful Chicago. Colin and Eric are live in studio with me. Special morning because we're halfway through 2018, so we're giving you our favorite movies of the year so far. Colin, Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll get back to the list here. My number 6. I'll just mention briefly because it's been talked about twice already, and that's Incredibles 2. The Incredibles 2, which I echo everything you guys said. It's I think it's every bit as good as the first one, and Brad Bird rules. So that's what I'm saying. So Incredibles 2, number 6 on my list.
My number 6 is Paul Schrader's First Reformed, Return to Form from, one of our great directors. All of the classic, Schrader themes are, brought back to light in this film, and it's all anchored by Ethan Hawke giving one of his best performances, one of the best of his career. Some unexpected moments of humor throughout this thing, which is otherwise a very dark, despairing film.
Yeah.
Of course, it's Paul Schrader, but it's his best movie in a long, long time, and it was one of the treats of our own film festival, if I should say so myself.
Right, having Schrader there too.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. All right.
My number 6 is a film I just caught up with this week called Lean on Pete. Andrew Haig, who did the film's Weekend and 45 Years, really has a really great grasp on doing stories. And Charlie Plummer, who had not stood out to me before, really leapt into the stratosphere for me here. Great story about this kid and his basically takes his job on the with horses off a low key racehorse. Steve Buscemi, Chloe Sevigny are in charge of it. Kind of a shady operation, and the journey that he takes from there is, again, the movie takes turns that are very unexpected. Some horrific stuff happens in this movie. It gets very dark at times, but ultimately gets to a place where it is incredibly moving and very satisfying. I really like this movie a lot. Lean on Pete.
Okay. All right, we're in the top 5. My number 5 is The Death of Stalin, which is easily the funniest movie of the year and one of the oddest in terms of casting and pretty much everything about it. I watched it again over the weekend. It's hilarious. I mean, it is a ridiculously funny movie. It's The Death of Stalin. I know the title doesn't sound like a comedy, and and you got a weird cast. I mean, but everybody's brilliant in it. It's from the guy who created In the Loop. And helped create Veep, And he's got a very wicked style to him in the way he writes. And I know we're going to be hearing about this one again, but Death of Stalin, number five for me. So.
My number five is a movie I don't think, I'm not sure either of you have caught up with yet. I had such a huge smile on my face the entire time of Paddington 2.
Still haven't seen it.
It has this unbelievable just inventiveness about it that reminded me in a way of Babe, Pig in the City. Which it's not nearly as dark,
right?
As that film, but like just the sort of sheer inventiveness of it that you know you just you wonder like, well, how is this character going to get out of this scene? And you're like, wait, what? How did that read on paper? I'm
right,
really
right,
curious.
Right.
It's just a delight from start to finish. This is turning out to be one of my favorite franchises. Not a lot of people are going to see him, but you know, I hope there's a Paddington 3. Actually,
this movie got great reviews,
yeah,
like across the board. It was everybody who saw it loved it.
Yeah, it's just if you were lucky enough to see it on the big screen, I mean, that's the place to see it. It's it's a beautiful movie.
Okay, all right, five for you, Eric.
Well, Colin, I did catch up with Paddington 2.
Oh,
that is my number five.
Nice.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Just a few hours ago, as a matter of fact. I watched both Paddington movies today.
Okay.
And I had not seen them before, and everyone talked about how, you know, how sweet they are, how lovely, how wonderful they are for kids and whatnot, but I have not heard people talk about how visually inventive these movies are. These movies have a visual style that I'm, you know, I thought of Babe, Pig in the City a lot, particularly during the Paddington 2. And you know, Paddington 2 to me felt like a live action Pixar film. It ends with a fantastic action sequence. It elevates its game in certain aspects. It's a prison movie on top of it.
Right.
It's a prison and a mystery, a detective story, and Hugh Grant is the villain in the film, and he's hilarious. Smile is the optimum word, but it is. It's beyond that. I mean, I cannot wait to show this movie to my nieces.
Yeah.
I mean, it is that level of quality and in an era that we see a lot of live-action movies like Peter Rabbit.
Yeah.
The Paddington movies are tremendous.
Yeah, I got to catch up with that. I really do. All right, my number four has been mentioned already. That's First Reformed. Well, Schrader's latest, really dark, a towering movie about crisis of faith and just... you know, really heavy, heavy stuff that Schrader has done, you know, before. You know, to say that this is maybe the best performance of Ethan Hawke's career, I would probably say that. And I've liked Ethan Hawke in a lot of movies, and he's a good actor. But this was just like, this is above and beyond. So it's a really dark, you know, and it's a heavy movie. Very, very heavy. But the payoff is enormous, and Ethan Hawke is great in it, and I hope he's remembered at the end of the year. So that's First Reformed. That's my number four.
My number four, I'll be the first one to mention this, but not the last, A Quiet Place. You know, just what a surprise from John Krasinski. I mean, especially considering he made, you know, one of the most insufferable indie comedies I've ever seen in the last 5 years, with The Hollers, really just silence his critics with something like this. It was like,
no pun intended.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, I'm happy he did, and this is a really amazing piece of work, and you know, great use of sound and everything. I mean, it's we'll hear more.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next.
My number four is The Death of Stalin. You know, there's nothing more, not a whole lot more that needs to be said about the movie. The casting is just insane across the board. It doesn't matter if who's a Russian or who's not Russian. I mean, it's Buscemi and Tambor and the guy that plays Barry. I always, Robert Beale, I think I forget his full name, is terrific. No one does insults like Armando Iannucci.
Yeah.
I mean, that they're just more choice thing. You thought that he wasted them all in Veep? No,
no.
He's got some great ones in this as well. And also, I think works as a perfect allegory for what we're going through in this country currently.
Yeah, that's also really funny.
Yes, it is.
All right, my number three is A Quiet Place, which was just mentioned. A Quiet Place, Krasinski directed the hell out of it. It's really scary, and beautifully acted. And it did. It was one of the most surprising films of the year. Also a huge success. And I loved it because it's a movie that actually makes the audience shut up. Like,
yeah.
You could hear I saw the movie twice in the theater. You could hear a pin drop. People were afraid to open their candy wrappers for fear of getting one of the characters in the movie killed. And I like that. I love the fact that Krasinski made audiences shut up and watch a movie. And it's also really scary and really well done. So that's my number three.
If only he could have done that for a Radiohead concert I went to last night. Shut up, people.
Yeah.
My number three is Lean on Pete, which Eric just mentioned. I'm glad you caught up with it because it's a great film. And it really sneaks up on you. Again, it has a really misleading poster. You think it's going to be a boy and his horse. You know, a boy discovers, you know, horses, and he loves this particular horse, and you know, they have a bond and everything.
That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is for a little bit, but not for long.
Right,
and that's one of the great things about it is just how unpredictable it is, but also how authentic and just, you know, down to earth it is about everything. Every character who comes into this thing is somebody that is, you know, born from reality, and it is really just a beautiful piece of work from Andrew Haig. Charlie Plummer's great in it. Steve Buscemi's great in it. He's having a great year.
Yeah.
Lean on Pete. Is it out yet on video? Or?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, definitely check it out.
Okay. All right. Eric, number three?
My number three is First Reformed. Everyone has been talking about it. I'll just say that I walked out of that movie and someone looked at me and wanted to know what I thought, and I just said, yikes.
Yeah.
You know, that was my reaction to it. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, Ethan Hawke, to say it's his best performance is high praise, and there's an argument to be made that it is.
Yeah.
But again, it's also Schrader's best work since Affliction,
maybe.
Yeah. Autofocus, Affliction, one of those two. And it's something that should be remembered by at the end of the year.
Okay. All right, number two, we're getting into the nitty-gritty here. Number two is Thoroughbreds, which is such a great movie, and that to me was seriously the biggest surprise at how much I love that movie. Like, I adore it. I just think it's great. So I must really like my number one, because Thoroughbreds is just an astonishing piece of work. These two actresses are great, wonderfully directed. It's creepy. It's funny, and Anton Yelchin is amazing in it. And I know it's out. It's on VOD right now, and it's so worth getting and watching. It's called Thoroughbreds. It didn't do very well at the box office. Not that many people saw it, but more people should. And the two lead actresses are both tremendous in this movie. So Thoroughbreds is my number two.
My number two is Hereditary. Eric, ask me what I thought of this movie. What
did you think of this movie, Colin?
Yikes.
Yeah.
There you go. That's all I can say. All right.
My number two is A Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
Krasinski directed the hell out of this movie. It's, you know, it takes a B-movie premise, weaves some elements of other monster movies we've seen before, but it's ultimately a family story. You know, it's a family story about how the dissection of how the connection of how much you can love your child can be whisked away by your need to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And how far you will go. And I think Krasinski, the actor, conveys that beautifully.
Absolutely.
In the movie. And I think that arc that develops between him and the children, just top notch.
There's also a devastating moment in the film involving Krasinski.
Yes.
Which is just like it's like annihilates you.
Yes.
It really does.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And again, ends on a perfect note.
Yeah.
Like, how do you end this movie? That's how you end this
perfect
movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great film. All right, number one, real shocker here. My number one is Hereditary. The scariest movie, I don't know, 30 years, featuring it's the best performance of the year. Toni Collette is unbelievable in the movie. It's weird. It's freaky. It's really scary. And everything about it, it's so brilliantly directed with such intelligence and force. And it's really creepy. And the score is awesome. Everything about this movie, I'm obviously, horror is my favorite genre, and this is a top-notch example of a great horror movie. This is a great movie, another one that I'm glad is making some money and has found an audience. So my favorite film so far of 2018 is Hereditary.
My number one is The Death of Stalin. I've been, you know, I've been saying this a lot. I said it tonight earlier. I've been kind of just frustrated with the state of mainstream American comedies over the years. They're trapped in this formula. And this movie isn't bound by any formula at all. From the casting, you know, to the situations that they put these characters in, and you know, the fact that it's, you know, based on real events, but it's presented in this way that is just so not obvious. And I get such a thrill out of watching Iannucci's work, with In the Loop and Veep. And then he also wrote a really funny movie called Four Lions about suicide bombers.
Right.
A comedy about suicide bombers. Right, like, that's, this guy's not afraid to go there. This guy's not afraid to take risks. And he nails it every time. And this movie, I watched it twice, and it just killed me every time. And I can't wait to see it a third time. So The Death of Stalin is my number one.
Such a great and funny movie. All right, Eric, what's your number one?
My number one matches with you, Nick.
Yeah.
It is Hereditary. And I had the pleasure of seeing this at the very first screening at Sundance this year, midnight showing. And if Krasinski was able to get people to shut up during A Quiet Place, I say the second best way to shut people up is to stick one of your character's head out of a car window.
Yeah.
That's a moment for the ages there. And you know, a movie like this to me is a little bit of a miracle. I mean, a first-time horror director comes out of nowhere with a story that you think you've seen a thousand times before, puts fresh spins on it, you know, is about something, is terrifying in that great unsettling way. It has jump scares in it. You're gonna, you know, jump out of your seat a few times, but you just walk out of this movie. I've never seen critics react to a horror movie like this in years. Yeah. Probably since before I was even born.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, maybe Rosemary's Baby and, you know, movies like that. But to see that grown men are losing stuff in their pants during this movie.
Yeah.
I think says something pretty, pretty interesting.
And it goes completely nuts at the end.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, just completely insane.
Yes.
And in a direction that I didn't think it was going to go to.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this is awesome, but it's insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Hereditary. I'm with you. That's my favorite. All right, so real quick, I'll give you my top 15, and you guys go through your 15. 15, The Seagull. 14, Ghost Stories. 13, Unsane. 12, Annihilation. 11, Isle of Dogs. 10, Ready Player One. 9, Hotel Artemis. 8, Tully. 7, Won't You Be My Neighbor. 6, The Incredibles 2. 5, The Death of Stalin. 4, First Reformed. 3, A Quiet Place. 2, Thoroughbreds. And 1, Hereditary. Colin?
Number 15, Whitney. 14, Journey's End. 13, Damsel. 12, Ready Player One. 11, Annihilation. 10, Won't You Be My Neighbor. 9, Thoroughbreds. 8, The Endless. 7, The Incredibles 2. 6, First Reformed. 5, Paddington 2. 4, A Quiet Place. 3, Lean on Pete. 2, Hereditary. And 1, The Death of Stalin.
And Eric.
Okay, number 15, Ready Player One. 14, Annihilation. 13, Tully. 12, Black Panther. 11, Thoroughbreds. 10, Incredibles 2. 9, The Rider. 8, The Endless. 7, Small Town Crime. 6, Lean on Pete. 5, Paddington 2. 4, The Death of Stalin. 3, First Reformed. 2, A Quiet Place, and 1, Hereditary.
There you go. Those are our favorites of the year so far. By the way, we're not going to have time for box office, but Ant-Man and the Wasp made $76 million. Is that underperforming?
It did fine. I mean, it's a big, it's like a 32% bump over the previous film.
Oh, okay.
But it was expected to do more this weekend, just when it shot out of the box on Thursday. They
right.
were anticipating maybe 85, maybe more, and it ended up on the low end of expectations.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week with all the new movie reviews.
Sounds good.
Okay. Eric, Colin, they'll join me again next Monday, and we're going to take a break right now on 720 WGN.